Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're tackling a question that honestly every single music creator asks at some point, right? From, the bedroom producer just uploading their first track, maybe feeling a bit lost, to the really seasoned artist with a whole catalog. And that question is, how do I actually collect all my music royalties?
Yeah, it's a big one.
It really is.
Yeah.
And look, this isn't just about, getting a check in the mail. It's about making sure your valuable music, the stuff you've poured your heart and soul into.
Hours and hours.
Exactly. The melodies, the lyrics, your story, that it generates every single cent it actually deserves. Because we see it all the time, creators leaving, frankly, significant money on the table.
Oh, absolutely. It's kind of heartbreaking sometimes.
It is money that is rightfully theirs, just because this whole landscape of music royalty collection can feel like, I don't know, a crazy maze.
It really can. Very fragmented.
So our mission in this deep dive is basically to demystify that maze. You want to make sure that doesn't happen to you.
Yeah.
If you've put in the time, the talent, the passion, you absolutely deserve to get paid for it.
Yeah.
And honestly, there's often a little check just sitting there waiting if you haven't been collecting properly.
That's so true. And what's fascinating here, I think, and it's definitely a common frustration for artists everywhere, is just how fragmented it all is.
Right.
It's like you said, a maze, or maybe like trying to navigate this huge river system, where the money flows into all these different little streams, these tributaries.
And each one has its own little gatekeeper.
Exactly. Its own gatekeeper, its own collection point. But look, the good news is if you have a clear map, a well-defined roadmap, it's not only manageable, it's totally conquerable.
Okay, good. That's reassuring.
Yeah, definitely. So this deep dive, it isn't just about like listing things off. We want to give you concrete, actionable
But
steps.
how to?
The how to, but also the why. You'll understand what to do, who to register with, all that. But just as importantly, why each step matters. So you can really take control of your financial future in music.
I like that. Control.
Think of your music like an intricate pipeline system.
Okay.
We're going to identify every single valve, every faucet where money should be flowing, and just make sure there are absolutely no leaks.
Love that analogy. A financial pipeline system for your music. Okay, so what does this roadmap, this pipeline diagram,
I
actually
love that.
look like?
Well,
We've basically broken it down into five, let's call them essential pillars for royalty collection. These are designed to catch pretty much every cent your music earns and all the different ways it gets used.
The core stuff.
The core stuff.
Yeah.
And then we're going to layer on a really vital sixth strategy. This one often holds the key to, truly maximize your income, building that deeper connection with your listeners.
Which is so important.
Crucial. And ultimately, making sure your passion can actually genuinely sustain you.
Yeah.
It's about being an artist, yes, but also a smart entrepreneur.
Absolutely. Artist and entrepreneur.
Okay, so pillar number one, first things first. Before any royalties can even start to trickle in, your music needs to be, well, it needs to be out there, accessible.
Can't collect if no one can hear it.
Exactly. You need your amazing tracks on all the major platforms where people actually listen. We're talking Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, TikTok, Tidal, all of them.
The digital service providers, yeah. Right,
DSPs.
the DSPs. Billions of people use these every single day. Think about it. How else is your track going to just instantly appear on millions of phones, laptops, speakers worldwide, reaching listeners everywhere?
You need a way in.
You do. And that crucial intermediary, the thing that makes it all possible, that's like the very first valve in our pipeline. That's your
Yeah.
music distributor.
The gatekeeper to the DSP.
Precisely. They handle all the sort of technical heavy lifting, taking your master recordings from your computer hard drive and getting them onto every major streaming and download platform you can think of.
Yeah, they handle the ingestion, the metadata, all that back-end stuff. We're talking about major players here. Reputable companies like DistroKid, Symphonic, CD Baby. There are lots of great options out there, actually.
There are, and they each have slightly different models, different strengths.
They do. And these companies, they have the relationships, the tech, the systems that let independent artists, you compete right alongside major label artists, just in terms of getting your music heard globally.
It really levels the playing field in that sense.
It absolutely does. So having a distributor, it's completely non-negotiable today. It just is.
Couldn't agree more. Foundational.
And choosing one, it can actually be kind of a strategic decision,
Yeah.
not just clicking upload. Like DistroKid, people often mention its speed. It's pretty easy to use. The pricing's competitive, usually like an annual fee for unlimited uploads.
Right, simple model.
Yeah. But then maybe Symphonic might appeal more if you're looking for like more artist services, maybe help with sync licensing, more hands-on account management. They usually take a percentage of royalties, though.
Different approach. More service-oriented, perhaps.
Right. And CD Baby, they got kind of a hybrid thing going on. Per-release fees, plus they offer physical distribution CDs. Vinyl, which could be really important if you have fans who still buy that stuff.
Yeah, if physical is part of your strategy.
So the point is, your choice isn't just about getting on the platforms. It's about aligning with like where you are in your career, what you need, what feels right administratively.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going for speed and simplicity or maybe deeper industry connections?
Exactly. It's worth thinking about because this initial connection, this distributor relationship, it's way more than just an upload portal. It is establishing that foundational pipe, that conduit for your streaming and download royalties.
Okay.
And the process itself is pretty direct. But you gotta understand it. When your music gets streamed or downloaded on any of these DSPs, Spotify, Bandcamp, whatever those platforms, they gather the usage data and then they pay your distributor.
Right. The money goes to the distributor first.
Now, correct. Your distributor then processes those payments, takes their cut, if that's their model, and then pays you, the creator, directly. That's why when you sign up, one of the very first things they ask for is your bank account info.
Makes sense. Got to know where to send the money.
Precisely. It's essential. Now, one really great administrative benefit, and some distributors like DistroKid really pioneered this and do it well, is the ability to split payments directly among your collaborators.
Oh, that's huge.
It really is. Say you worked with a co-writer or a singer or a producer, maybe Johnny, right? And you agreed Johnny gets 50% of the royalties from that track.
Yeah.
DistroKid can actually pay Johnny his 50% directly. You don't have to touch it.
Wow. So I don't have to collect it all, then figure out who gets what, and send it out myself.
Exactly. It hugely reduces the administrative headache for you as the main artist. You're not stuck tracking micropayments, doing complicated accounting, manually sending out shares every few months.
But it saves so much time.
Yeah.
And potential awkwardness.
Totally. It streamlines the financial side within creative teams, helps prevent arguments, builds trust, and just simplifies what can be a really complex and tedious accounting job.
Yeah, it frees you up to actually make music.
That's the goal. More music, less spreadsheets.
So once your music is out there globally, distributed, and those initial streaming and download royalties are starting to flow through that first pipe, our system expands.
Yeah.
A totally different kind of royalty starts to build up. And this one is for every time your song, the actual composition, is heard in public.
Okay, now this is where it gets really interesting. And honestly, this is where a huge number of artists just unknowingly leave serious money behind.
Definitely a major leakage point in the pipeline.
Totally. Have you ever like been in a coffee shop and suddenly heard your song playing? Or maybe in a gym video, or you've played it live somewhere, even just a tiny dive bar open mic night?
Yeah, those moments.
This public plays, whether it's the recording playing or you performing it live, they generate royalties for you. These are called public performance royalties.
Mm-hmm. Performance rights. And the organizations, the entities responsible for collecting these, they're called performance rights organizations, or PROs.
The PROs, ESCAP, BMI, SESAC in the U.S.
Right. Think about it. Your music playing in a shopping mall, setting the mood in a restaurant, maybe background music on a TV show, or even like hold music on a phone system.
Yeah, all those uses count.
All those are public performances of your musical composition. And those businesses, those broadcasters, they actually have to pay license fees to the PROs for the legal right to play music.
It's the cost of doing business for them if they use music.
Exactly. So when you, as the songwriter, and maybe the publisher too, we'll get into that, when you register your songs with a PRO, you make sure a piece of those license fees comes back to you.
You're basically telling the PRO, hey, I wrote this song. If it gets played, send my share here.
Precisely. And here's something maybe less known. PROs often track performances in really unexpected places, like background music in a doctor's office.
Yeah.
Hold music. A local sports radio show using your track as like bumper music between segments.
All potentially generating royalties.
Many artists are leaving cash on the table because they just don't realize how widespread these uses are. And how PROs, even though they can seem slow sometimes with payouts, are actually working to capture all that.
They have systems, monitoring, reporting.
Yeah.
It's complex, but they do track it.
And it's global too, right? PROs are everywhere. We mentioned BMI and ESCAP, the big two in the U.S. But in the U.K., you've got PRS, Canada, it's SOCAN.
Every major territory has its own society, pretty much.
So the key takeaway here is Register with a PRO in your own country first. That's how you start capturing these performance royalties within your home territory.
Absolutely crucial. And this type of royalty, the performance royalty, it's unique. It's really important because it specifically relates to your composition.
The song itself.
Exactly. The underlying musical work, the melody, the lyrics, the structure you wrote, it's not about the specific master recording of it.
Okay, that's a key distinction. Composition versus recording.
It's probably the most fundamental legal split that confuses artists starting out. But it's not arbitrary. It comes straight from copyright law.
Right.
Copyright law treats the underlying song as one piece of intellectual property with its own rights, and then the specific sound recording, the version you performed, engineered, mixed, that's a separate, distinct piece of intellectual property.
Two different copyrights, potential.
Two different copyrights, often owned by different people, or even if you own both, mm-hmm. they require separate attention, separate registrations to collect everything. So your PRO collects royalties for the song itself, its existence, its public use, not the specific MP3 file being streamed.
Got it. So practically speaking, in the U.S., you mentioned BMI and ASCAP.
Yeah.
Do they basically do the same thing?
Substantially, yes. They both collect U.S. public performance royalties for songwriters and publishers. There are some, you know, operational differences, maybe slight differences in how they track certain things or their payment schedules. And fee structures can differ slightly, too. As of, well, right now, BMI usually has a small sign-up fee for songwriters, maybe around $50, something like that.
Okay, manageable.
Yeah. ASCAP, on the other hand, typically doesn't charge songwriters to join, so that might be attractive if you're just starting out watching every penny.
Good to know.
However, and this is important, both of them will charge a fee, usually a couple hundred dollars if you're registering as a publisher.
Okay. So, songwriter versus publisher. What if I'm independent? Like, I wrote the song, I recorded it, I'm putting it out myself.
Yeah.
Am I both?
Yes. That's exactly it. Even if you, the independent artist, are fulfilling both roles you wrote the song and you're effectively self-publishing it, you need to understand these roles for registration.
So I need to register twice or tell them I'm both.
You need to register yourself as a writer and set up and register your own publishing entity, even if it's just, you know, your name, music publishing, and be aware of those potential fees for the publisher side.
Why is that necessary? Why split it?
Because the royalties themselves are split. Typically, performance royalties are divided. 50-50, there's a writer's share and a publisher's share.
Ah.
So if you own 100% of your song, you'd register with your PRO, let's say ASCAP as the writer, claiming your 50% writer's share. And you'd also register your name music publishing as the publisher, claiming the other 50% publisher's share.
And if I only register as a writer?
You're only collecting half of what you're actually owed from those public performances.
Wow. Okay, that detail alone feels like a huge potential pitfall.
It's one of the most common places independent artists miss out on money. So get that structure right with your PRO.
Okay, so PROs cover the public performance of the composition. We've tapped that stream. But you mentioned a difference earlier. What about digital stuff where people aren't actively picking my track? Like online radio.
Non-interactive digital broadcasts. That brings us neatly to our third essential collection point, which focuses specifically on the recorded version of your music in those situations.
Okay, this one. I feel like this one gets missed a lot. It's like a hidden gem in the pipeline, maybe, but crucial.
It often is overlooked, yeah, but potentially very lucrative.
We're talking about platforms where listeners can't just pick any song they want, right? They can't make their own playlists, skip every track they don't like.
Right, it's more like traditional radio, but digital. Lean back listening.
Yeah, exactly. They tune into a station or a channel, it's curated, and your song might pop up, but the listener didn't directly choose it.
Pandora's free tier, SiriusXM satellite radio, webcasters, internet radio stations.
Those kinds of services. So the platform for collecting royalties from this specific type of streaming, non-interactive streaming, they call it, is SoundExchange.
That's the one. SoundExchange. Unique role.
So you register with them to get paid when your music plays on Pandora, SiriusXM, maybe even those digital jukeboxes and bars.
Correct. These services, in the U.S. specifically, operate under what's called a statutory license. Basically, the law sets the rate they have to pay to play sound recordings in a non-interactive way. And SoundExchange is the only organization designated by law to collect those specific statutory license fees and distribute them to the right people.
The only one. So you have to go through them for this type of royalty.
For these specific statutory, non-interactive digital performance royalties in the U.S., yes, absolutely essential.
Okay. Now, help me keep this straight again. PROs versus SoundExchange. What's the core difference one more time?
Key difference. PROs like BMI, ASCAP, Collect for the Composition, the song you wrote, melody, lyrics, Sound Exchange collects for the sound recording, the master, the actual recorded version of your song.
Got it. Composition versus recording. Two different rights.
Two different rights under copyright law and needing separate registration. Sound Exchange pays out to two parties, actually. The owner of the sound recording, which might be you or your label if you have one, and the featured artist on that recording, which is definitely you.
Oh, interesting. So as the artist who performed on the track, I get a piece directly from Sound Exchange, separate from who owns the master.
Yes. By law, a portion is allocated directly to the featured performers. It's a nice protection built in for artists.
Cool. Okay.
Now, here's what's really remarkable about Sound Exchange, and this is where people often have that aha moment. It's their potential for retroactive payment.
Retroactive. Meaning?
Meaning, unlike a lot of other places where you only start collecting money from the day you register onwards, Sound Exchange might actually have money waiting for you right now.
Seriously? How?
If you've had music out getting played on Pandora or internet radio for maybe months or even years, and you haven't registered with Sound Exchange yet, they've likely been collecting royalties for those plays on your behalf anyway.
They collect it even if they don't know who I am yet.
They collect based on the track information provided by the services. They diligently gather the funds, even if the artist or label hasn't registered, and they hold it in trust, waiting for the rightful owner to claim it.
Wow. Okay.
I can actually share a quick personal story on that.
Yeah, please do.
Years ago, when I first learned about Sound Exchange, I'd had some music out, getting a bit of play on some digital stations, didn't really know about this. I finally registered, and not long after, I literally got a small check in the mail.
No way.
Yes. For royalties that had built up before I even registered. It wasn't a fortune, but it was real money. And it was such a clear demonstration of, one, this retroactive thing is real, and two, how much money you can leave behind if you miss this step.
That's a great story. A real aha moment, like you said.
It totally solidified for me the difference between PROs and Sound Exchange and the need to be registered everywhere. So really, the most practical advice I can give anyone listening is go register your music with Sound Exchange, like today.
Okay, message received. It's separate from your distributor, separate from your PRO. Do it.
Absolutely. Don't leave that potential money sitting there unclaimed. Go get it.
All right. So we've covered distributors getting music out, PROs for public performance of the song, Sound Exchange for non-interactive plays of the recording. What else is in this pipeline?
Well, we've talked about performance, but there's another crucial type of royalty tied to the reproduction of your music, especially digitally. Another big piece of the puzzle.
Okay, let's talk mechanicals. Mechanical royalties. That sounds kind of old-fashioned, doesn't it? Like machines.
Yeah, the name is a bit historical. Originally, it literally referred to the fees paid when your song was mechanically reproduced onto something physical.
Like vinyl records.
Exactly. Vinyl, cassette tapes, CDs, even player piano rolls way back when. That was the original mechanical reproduction.
Okay, makes sense. But how does that apply now in the streaming age?
Great question. In the digital world, the concept still applies, but it's about digital reproduction. Every time your music specifically, the underlying composition again is reproduced digitally. A mechanical royalty is triggered.
Reproduced digitally, like when it's streamed.
Precisely. When someone streams your song on Spotify or Apple Music, technically, a temporary digital copy of that song file is made on their device's cache, on the servers, to make the stream happen. Even though it's temporary, that act of digital reproduction triggers a mechanical royalty for the composition.
Wow. Okay. So every single stream has both a performance royalty paid via PROs and a mechanical royalty component.
Generally speaking, for interactive streams, yes, it's complex, but that's the basic idea. Two different rights being exploited simultaneously.
Okay. So who collects these mechanical royalties in the U.S. now?
In the United States, there's now a specific organization designed just for this, particularly for digital mechanicals. It's called the Mechanical Licensing Collective, or the MLC.
The MLC. Okay, another acronym to remember.
Yep. The MLC is actually a nonprofit organization, and it was mandated by the U.S. government under a big piece of legislation called the Music Modernization Act back in 2018.
Ah, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, it was a big deal. Its whole purpose was to clean up and streamline the collection and distribution of these digital mechanical royalties from streaming services in the U.S.
Okay. So when do these mechanicals get paid? Besides streaming,
Well, the classic example is still cover songs. If someone wants to record and legally release their own version of your song, they need a mechanical license to reproduce your composition.
Right.
But really, the huge volume today comes from the DSPs, the streaming services. The MLC issues a blanket mechanical license to the DSPs operating in the U.S. The DSPs pay the MLC based on usage.
And then the MLC pays the songwriters and publishers.
Exactly. The MLC's job is to take that massive pool of money from the DSPs, match the usage data to the correct song compositions in their database, figure out who owns the publishing rights, and then pay those creators, the songwriters and publishers.
That sounds like a huge improvement. What was it like before the MLC?
Oh, it was messy. Honestly, it was incredibly complex and frustrating, especially for independent artists, to track and collect digital mechanicals.
How so?
You might have had to try and get licenses directly from each individual DSP or rely on a complex web of agencies and sub-publishers. The data matching was often terrible. It resulted in massive amounts of what they called unmatched royalties or black box money.
Meaning money paid by Spotify, but they couldn't figure out who to give it to.
Precisely. Billions, literally billions of dollars over the years just sitting there because the ownership data was incomplete or inaccurate. The MLC was created specifically to fix that problem for U.S. digital mechanicals.
Okay, so that's a huge relief then. If I register with the MLC, it should just happen.
Largely, yes, that's the beauty of it. Because it's mandated by law, the DSPs have to pay into the MLC for their U.S. streams. So for you as the creator, the main thing is ensuring you are properly registered with the MLC.
So again, it's about getting into the right system, the right funnel, as you put it earlier.
Exactly. You need to register your compositions with the MLC proactively. Make sure all your metadata, the song title, songwriter names and splits, publisher information, ideally things like ISRC codes for the recordings, is accurate and consistent everywhere.
Metadata, again, seems really important.
Crucial. Clean, accurate data is key for the MLC to match the money they receive from Spotify back to your specific song and pay you correctly. But once you're properly registered and your data is good, they handle a huge amount of the heavy lifting for collection and payment. It's a massive administrative relief.
That's great. So it moves things from being chaotic to much more centralized and efficient, at least for U.S. digital mechanicals.
Correct. Big step forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've covered collection within primarily the United States quite thoroughly now. Distributor, PRO, SoundExchange, MLC. But my music might get played outside the U.S., right? What happens then?
Yes. The global question. In our hyper-connected world, that's not just a possibility. It's almost guaranteed if your music finds any traction at all. And that brings us to our fifth pillar, extending that pipeline across borders.
Right. This feels like a really important pro tip. Because like you said, the internet doesn't care about borders. Your music can end up anywhere.
Absolutely. Overnight, potentially.
Imagine, like, Sarah, she's an indie artist from Denver, right? And suddenly her track blows up on some TikTok trend in Japan.
Yeah. Or gets used in a popular video game trailer made in Germany.
Exactly. Yeah. It's amazing when that happens. But here's the catch, the core problem. Your local PRO, your BMI, your ASCAP here in the U.S. or PRS in the U.K., SOCAN in Canada, they typically only collect performance royalties within their own country.
They have reciprocal agreements with foreign societies, but direct collection is usually limited to their home turf.
So all those plays Sarah's song is getting in Japan from the TikTok trend, or in Germany from the game trailer.
Yeah.
The performance royalties generated over there.
Likely going uncollected. Poof. Evaporating into thin air.
Why? Just because she's not registered with Jazzrak in Japan or Regima in Germany?
Precisely. Her U.S. PRO isn't set up to directly collect performance royalties from every single coffee shop, radio station, or game developer in every single country around the world.
Okay, that sounds like a lot of missed money. A huge potential leak in the pipeline.
It absolutely can be, especially if you gain significant international traction. This is a vast, often untapped stream of income for many artists.
So what's the solution? How do you plug that global leak?
The solution is usually a service known as a global publishing administrator. And probably the best known example, especially for independent artists, is a company called SongTrust.
SongTrust, okay. Heard of them.
Oh.
So what do they do?
Companies like SongTrust are specifically designed to solve this exact problem. They collect those international performance royalties on your behalf, making sure you don't miss out on income from your fans and listeners around the world.
How do they do that? Do they register me in every country?
Effectively, yes, but not by you having to do it. Imagine trying yourself to register with the PRO in Japan, Germany, France, Brazil, Australia.
Oh, God, no. That sounds like an absolute nightmare. The paperwork, the languages.
Exactly, an administrative nightmare of epic proportions. I've actually looked into doing that directly for clients before, setting up individual accounts in multiple countries.
Yeah.
Quickly decided it was totally unfeasible for an independent artist, probably even for a small label. The bureaucracy, the different rules, the language barriers, the sheer time it would take, it would just drain all your creative energy.
Yeah, no thanks.
So that's the problem SongTrust and similar companies solve. They offer a centralized, efficient way around that nightmare.
Oh.
They have proactively gone out and built direct relationships and technical integrations with dozens, maybe even hundreds, of PROs and collection societies all over the world.
Oh, so they have the connections already set up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They have this massive global network. So when you sign up with them and give them your song information, they register your songs with all those societies globally through their network. Then they actively collect the international performance royalties generated in those territories on your behalf.
So they act like my global representative.
Precisely. Your global publishing administrator. They take on the burden of dealing with all those different societies, making sure your songs are properly tracked and you get paid no matter where they're performed.
That sounds incredibly useful.
Yeah.
Any other benefits?
Yeah. Often they can also help with collecting mechanical royalties globally, too, not just performance. Sometimes they can even help chase down historical unpaid royalties. And they often provide consolidated reporting, which is nice.
Okay, so they can potentially streamline things even more, maybe even beyond just international performance royalties.
They can. Some might even help collect the publisher's share of domestic performance royalties from your local PRO or the mechanicals handled by the MLC, acting as a sort of one-stop shop for your publishing administration.
Wow. Okay, that sounds amazing. Is there a catch?
Well, it's not really a catch, but it's a crucial consideration. They provide a valuable service and they charge for it. SongTrust takes a fee.
How much typically?
Usually it's a percentage of the royalties they collect for you. Often around 15%, give or take.
Okay, 15% of what they collect. That seems reasonable for handling all that international complexity.
For the international royalties, you likely wouldn't collect otherwise. Absolutely, it's usually well worth it. But here's the important nuance. If you also have them collect royalties from your home country.
Where I'm already registered with my local PRO, like ASCAP.
Exactly. If you have SongTrust collect those domestic royalties too, they will take their percentage, say, 15% from that money, as well money you could have collected directly from ASCAP without paying that extra percentage.
Ah, okay, so it's a trade-off. Convenience versus keeping that extra percentage on domestic earnings.
Precisely. It's a cost-benefit analysis you need to do based on your situation. Is the convenience of having everything managed in one place by SongTrust worth giving them a cut of your domestic royalties too?
When would it make sense? When wouldn't it?
If you have significant international plays like real radio play in Europe, syncs in Asia, SongTrust is almost certainly indispensable. You're trading 15% for getting the other 85% you wouldn't have seen otherwise.
Makes total sense there.
But if you're just starting out and almost all your plays are currently domestic, maybe you stick with just your local PRO for now, collect 100% of that domestic share yourself, and then consider SongTrust later when your international reach grows.
Okay, that's a really clear way to think about it. Assess where your income is actually coming from.
Exactly. Weigh the global reach and administrative ease against the fee, particularly for money you could potentially collect directly.
All right. So, these five pillars: distributor, PROs, Sound Exchange, MLC, and potentially SongTrust for global whalers. They cover the formal channels for collecting royalties, right? We seal the leaks in the institutional pipeline.
That's a good way to put it. Those are the main mechanisms for collecting the money generated by the use of your music under copyright law.
But here's the thing, and maybe it's the elephant in the room. Even if you do all of that perfectly, set everything up, the reality for many, maybe most artists, is that those royalty checks still aren't huge, right?
That is, unfortunately, often the reality, yes, unless you're getting millions upon millions of streams or massive radio play.
So how do you really make a living? How do you truly monetize this passion and build a sustainable career beyond just chasing fractions of pennies from streams?
Ah, now we get to the sixth strategy, the mindset shift.
Right.
Moving beyond just collecting to actively creating value and connecting directly with the people who love your music most.
Right. This feels like where we need to fundamentally shift how we think about things, not just passively collecting, but actively.
Selling.
Engaging.
Actively engaging, creating value, and yes, facilitating direct support. While those five royalty streams are absolutely essential, don't skip them. The hard truth, like you said, is they often won't make you rich on their own.
Unless you hit that lottery of millions and millions of plays.
Exactly. The per-stream payouts from Spotify, Apple Music, etc. are notoriously tiny, fractions of a cent. You need massive volume for it to add up significantly.
So what's the core problem? Why do artists struggle with making more money, even when they have fans?
I think often it comes down to mindset. Artists are driven by this incredible passion, right? Which is amazing. But sometimes that passion makes it hard to see the music not just as pure art, but also as a valuable product.
Yeah, like it feels maybe dirty to think about selling it directly.
It can feel that way sometimes, I think. We're so focused on creating and sharing, maybe worried about seeming salesy, that we overlook or even actively shy away from these direct monetization opportunities that actually offer much, much better financial returns.
So the mindset shift is what?
It's simple, but it's profound. You need to care more about making money from your music. You have to. You need to fully recognize its inherent value, not just its artistic value, but its economic value.
It's okay to treat it like a product you've created.
Absolutely. It's an experience. It's a piece of your soul, yes, but it's also something people are often willing, even eager, to pay for, especially if they connect with it. Your music is valuable. You deserve compensation. Often it's only the artists themselves who undervalue their own work financially because of that passion, or maybe some societal idea that art should be free. We need to flip that script.
Okay, I'm with you. Care more about getting paid for the value you create.
Exactly. And this isn't about being greedy or transactional in a cold way. It's really about building genuine reciprocal connections with your audience.
Reciprocal.
Yeah. You give them amazing music and experiences, and you empower them to directly support your ability to keep doing that. They become patrons, partners in your art. This is the core idea behind the direct-to-fan or direct-to-consumer D2C model.
D2C.
And honestly, it's probably the single most powerful tool you have for financial sustainability as an artist today. It lets you bypass a lot of the traditional middlemen.
Labels, big retailers.
Right, and create this much more intimate, engaged, and frankly, financially rewarding relationship directly with your core fan base, the people who really get what you do.
It's about finding your people and letting them support you directly.
Precisely. Cultivating a community that values your art enough to invest in it directly.
Okay, so let's get practical. What does D2C actually look like? What are some examples of how artists are doing this successfully?
Oh, there are so many cool ways. Let's brainstorm a few. First, early access and exclusive content. This is huge. Offer your fans a chance to buy or hear a new song, or even a whole EP or album before it hits Spotify.
Like a pre-release window just for them.
Exactly. Maybe for a set price. It creates buzz, rewards your biggest fans, and really importantly, it generates upfront income you can use. You can also sell exclusive stuff, behind-the-scenes videos, demos, alternate mixes, maybe even access to a private online listening party with you.
Cool. What else?
Physical merchandise, but with a twist. Go beyond just the standard band t-shirt, although those are great too. Think unique items, maybe custom USB drives shaped like something cool, loaded with your whole discography, maybe some unreleased tracks, a personal video message.
Oh, I like that. More special.
Totally. Or limited edition vinyl pressings with unique artwork, maybe hand-numbered and signed by you. That feeling of scarcity and the personal touch makes it way more valuable than just a regular CD.
Yeah, fans love exclusive, limited stuff.
They do. Then there's the pay what you want model. Platforms like Bandcamp are amazing for this, but you could even set up simple payment links, PayPal, Venmo, whatever. Let fans download your album or EP and pay whatever they feel it's worth.
Does that actually work? Do people pay?
Surprisingly often, yes. And sometimes they pay more than you would have charged as a set price because they feel empowered and want to show their support.
Interesting psychology there.
Definitely. Another big one now is tiered fan subscriptions or patronage. Think platforms like Patreon. Fans pay a small amount each month, like $3, $5, $10, whatever.
And they get different perks based on the tier.
Exactly. Maybe the basic tier gets access to an exclusive Discord server and early song snippets. Mid-tier gets high-quality downloads and monthly Q&A sessions. Top tier gets, I don't know, personalized video messages or guest list spots at shows. It provides recurring, predictable income for you and ongoing value for them.
That recurring income sounds really appealing.
It's a game changer for many artists. And finally, don't forget crowdfunding. For specific big projects, funding a new album recording, making a professional music video, financing a tour platforms like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, let your fan base directly invest in making it happen.
And they get rewards for backing the project.
Usually, yeah. Exclusive merch, early access, maybe their name in the album credits, unique experiences. It makes them feel like part of the journey.
Okay, those are all really concrete, actionable ideas. It's not just theoretical.
Not at all. And I've heard so many powerful stories from indie artists who really leaned into DTC, like artists getting literally hundreds of dollars from a single fan for one album download via Bandcamp's Pay What You Want.
Wow. Compared to what? Like maybe a dollar from thousands of streams?
Exactly. The difference is staggering. And it's not just the money, though that's obviously huge. It's the connection. It deepens that bond between the artist and the fan.
Yeah, it makes the listener feel like an active supporter, not just a passive consumer.
That's the perfect way to put it. D2C provides that more direct, much more lucrative income stream. You keep way more of the money, often 80, 90% or even more, versus those stream fractions. And it transforms listeners into invested supporters. It really completes the picture of how to monetize everything you do with your music.
It feels like it puts the power back in the artist's hands.
It absolutely does. It challenges the old models, gives you control over your career, your finances, and crucially, your relationship with your audience. It's about building that sustainable career directly with the people who love what you do. Hashtag tag tag outro.
Okay. So let's try and bring all this together then. We've gone through a lot, mapping out this whole financial pipeline, trying to plug all the lead.
Covered a lot of ground.
We really did. So what does this all mean for you, the person listening right now? The music creator, the artist, the entrepreneur of your own art?
Yeah, what's the takeaway?
It means you really do have the power to take comprehensive control of your music's financial journey. It's not just some mysterious black box.
You can understand it. You can manage it.
Exactly. We've walked through the six essential strategies, right?
Yeah.
The foundation. Getting your music out there with a music distributor. Then diligently registering with your performance rights organization, PRO, for those public performance royalties of your song.
Don't forget the composition recording split.
Never. Making sure SoundExchange is collecting for your recordings on those non-interactive streams. Hooking into the Mechanical Licensing Collective, MLC, in the U.S., for reproduction royalties, especially from streaming.
All the U.S. bases covered there.
Right. Then expanding globally, if needed, with a service like Song Trust to catch those international performance royalties.
Plugging the international leaks.
And finally, maybe most powerfully, embracing that vital direct-to-fan D2C approach. Connecting deeply, creating value, and monetizing directly with your most dedicated audience.
Building that community.
Building that community. Look, your music is valuable. It really is incredibly valuable. And you absolutely deserve to be compensated every single time it's used or enjoyed.
Rich.
These systems, these strategies, they're all in place. They're waiting for you to engage with them. So the call to action is really, stop leaving money on the table. Stop letting your hard work go unrewarded.
Take action.
Take action. Start actively building a sustainable, thriving future for your art. You have to take control because honestly, no one else is going to do it for you with the same passion you have for your own music.
Couldn't agree more. And maybe just one final thought to leave people with.
Yeah.
In this era where there's just so much digital content, right?
Yeah.
Music everywhere, all the time, it can feel overwhelming. The true measure, I think, of an artist's real success, and especially their sustainability, it often lies not just in the streaming numbers or the follower counts.
Okay, where then?
It's found in those direct personal connections you manage to forge, in the authentic community you build around your art, and in the direct support that those connections inspire.
So it comes back to the D2C idea, the direct relationships.
It really does. It's about building that loyal tribe, people who value what you create enough to invest in it directly, who see themselves not just as passive listeners, but as like patrons who are enabling you to keep creating.
I love that. Patrons of your craft.
Exactly. So I just really encourage everyone listening, keep exploring this stuff. Treat the music business side as an ongoing learning journey, just like your music itself. Maybe look into some proper music business training or find a good music business course on how to become your own record label.
Empower yourself with knowledge.
Totally. These tools can genuinely empower you to shape your own career, take control of your destiny, and really turn that incredible passion you have into a thriving, self-sufficient profession. The power really is in your hands to make your art sustainable.